Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
They rush forward. They run a stunt. Barnes hits him. Down he goes. Back at the 42-yard line. Deion Barnes with the sack for the Nittany Lions.
And here's the handoff. McCreary left side has a hole, leans ahead, and he is into the end zone. Touchdown, Shikalemi.
Empty backfield. They show blitz. Barrett goes back. Here comes Barnes. He delivers. Intercepted. 35-30. Near side, 25-20. 15-10-5. Zettel. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions defense turns the game around.
Pistol formation. Offset McCreary to the right. Low snap. Controlled by Schlegel. He'll fire it to Dunn. Great block to the 30. Now to the outside of the 25-20. 15-10-5. Touchdown. And Shikalemi, Dunn on the wide receiver screen, got a beauty of a block from Joe Snyder downfield and broken for the touchdown.
Elliott to the right now at Barrett, two left, two right. Barrett takes it, wants to throw on first down. A lot of time over the middle, intercepted by Hull at the 40. Hull near side, 45-50. Hull swings it to his left at the 45. It's spun down there, and the defense does it again.
Kerber in motion to the near side, making it one receiver to the near side. Play action pass. Schlegel back to pass. Has a lifetime. Looking long downfield. Kerber caught for a touchdown! Kerber in double coverage makes the grab, and the Braves have extended the lead 20-0 with 2:08 to go on a 33-yard touchdown pass from Petey to Kerber.
Hackenberg back, wants to throw for it. Near corner, looking for Saeed Blackdahl, reaches up in the end zone. He's got it! Touchdown, Penn State! It's a one-score game! With 11:08 to go, and this joint goes wild.
Clock winding with 4:12 to go. Feldman, sidecar right. Gannett rolling out. Pressure's coming. Gets a block. Sets up. Fires it downfield in the end zone. Touchdown! Danville in the back of the end zone.
Waits. Good snap. Put down. For overtime. The kick is up. The kick is good! Penn State comes all the way back and ties Ohio State 17-17 with 9 seconds to go. And in the clutch, the Nittany Lions do it again.
Here's the handoff. Ford over the right side has some running room to the 2, to the 1. Touchdown! Quanier Ford with his first touchdown of the season. And with 7:23 remaining, it is Shikalemi 34 and Danville 7.
Takes the snap. Belt keeps it himself up the middle. Belt to the goal line. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions take the lead in overtime.
Okay. We'll talk more about the Penn State game in just a few moments. The Steelers won big yesterday with an unbelievable offensive performance. We're going to bring in Dave Bryan now from SteelersDepot.com to talk about it. And Dave, the Roethlisberger numbers off the charts, over 500 yards passing, brilliant as to what they did. Your thoughts on looking at it in person and then on the tape.
40 of 49 for 522 yards. And in fact, of those 9 completions, I think you could probably circle about 3 of them that were clean drops. I know Martavis Bryant had one, Dre Archer had one, and Heath Miller had one. So Roethlisberger was in the zone, and that's an understatement. He looked like a pitcher trying to go after a no-hitter there. What the Steelers did right were in this game. First of all, the Colts really didn't come after them in that game. You know, they pretty much tried to lay back in coverage, and when they did come, the Steelers had the answer up front. The offensive line really played well. I mean, that's collectively the best performance that we've probably seen out of this offensive line all season. And that was with Mike Adams as well, too. Mike Adams had to start at right tackle. Right. His first start of the season, being as Marcus Gilbert was out of that game. They went vertical in this game a little bit more. I think we saw about six throws from Roethlisberger that I've charted out as going 20 yards or more down the field. And I think you had another 11 or 12 throws in this game, too, that went approximately 11 to 19 yards down the field. And he was just all over. He completed four of the six throws past 20 yards, and something like six or seven, I think, of the other passes nine of the other passes that he threw. Of the 11 that he threw, 11 or 19 yards down the field. So really did a good job of stretching the field vertically. And then, you know, more importantly, when this team got inside the red zone this time around, and they also had the success against the Texans, you know, Monday night, they're converting inside the red zone. You know, the team's been able to move the ball up and down the field between the 20s pretty much all season, but they had been struggling in the red zone. But right now it looks like those problems are currently behind them.
Give me an idea of the kind of all-around back Le'Veon Bell has developed into.
Boy, he is incredible. You know, I don't want to put him too high up there. You know, I mean, he's right up there probably with the Matt Fortes. I don't want to put him on DeMarco Murray's level just yet.
No.
But, you know, Le'Veon Bell, one thing about him, especially running with the football, you hardly ever see him fall backwards. He's always, even on gains where he only gains two or three yards, he always seems to be falling forward. And it means a lot not to have negative yardage on a play. You know, sure, you're going to have runs only go for two or three yards at times, but it's a lot easier to work out of a second and seven, a second of eight situation than it is, you know, second and long. So that's one of the primary traits that you see in him. Also, he is as patient can be in reading his blocks up front, especially on blocks that go inside the tackles. And then let's not forget the way this team right now has been using him out of the backfield as a pass catcher. He knows how to read the defenses. The ball gets on him. He's able to find it quickly, and he's able to get good yardage after the catch and run away from people. So when you talk about an all around complete back, he's it. And he really, Ben Roethlisberger talked prior to this game about how they were going to try to get him involved even more in the passing game moving forward. So expect to continue to see him split out wide and used out of the backfield on some of these dump-off passes.
Defensively, we know Andrew Luck is an outstanding quarterback. He didn't have Reggie Wayne. The blitz packages, did you expect to see the number of blitz packages that Dick LeBeau dialed up? Because it looked like we were looking at a tape from 3 to 5 years ago with the number of people he sent.
Well, when you go back and you look at the history of Dick LeBeau, when he has a lead, you know, talking about 10 points or more, generally, that's when he likes to dial things up. If it's a close ball game, Dick LeBeau usually plays things, you know, kind of close to the vest. But if there's blood in the water and he thinks he's got an offense back on their heels, that's when he starts going after people. And look, it was they knew what they had to do in this game. If they just sat back in this game with Andrew Luck, he was going to pick them apart. He picked them apart pretty much anyway, no thanks to the play, you know, some of the corner play and the explosive plays that they gave up. And you knew going into this game that you weren't going to shut Andrew Luck out. The thing was to try to get constant pressure on him, keep getting hits on him, knocking him down, and hopefully hope that he'll make a mistake. And Luck actually did end up making two key mistakes in that game, the first being the pick six by Will Allen early in the game, and of course the second he tripped over his own lineman's feet there following the turnover by LeGarrette Blount, and then that resulted in a safety there. So I wasn't overly surprised to see the amount of numbers sent after Luck, especially once the Steelers got on top of the Colts in a hurry there. So we'll see how it goes moving forward, but the one good thing that you'd like to see is when they were sending these guys, they were getting home. They knocked, and props to Andrew Luck. What a fine young quarterback that kid is, because he really stood in that pocket and made some plays, even though he took a lot of shots, a lot of hits in that game.
Man, no question. The corner play, Dave. I know, actually, it was a day where a lot of points, a weekend where a lot of points were scored by NFL winners yesterday. What about the corner play for the Steelers? Are they fundamentally in the right spot? Let's start with that. Sometimes you can be in the right spot and just not make the play. And I've seen that repeatedly, because the great ones are the ones who get in the right spot, and then they do make the play. Are they in the right spot? Let's start with that.
Well, I think William Gay is as sound can be right now. William Gay really has, you know, people like to make him the whipping boy over the years, but William Gay's been playing good football now for going on two seasons. I think he's fine on that side. Where the problem is, of course, is Cortez Allen on the other side. That young kid right now is just going through one heck of a struggle. I mean, it is horrendous. You probably have to go back to remember Ricardo Coakley in those days back there, to find a cornerback that has probably struggled as bad as Cortez is right now. You know, if you go back and you go back through this tape right now, of course, we don't have the all 22. We're still going off of the game tape right now.
Right.
There were a couple of plays where he looked like, you know, he was close to being in position, just not getting turned around, or just, you know, half a step late and not making a play. Now, there was another play or two in there where he was just nowhere close, beat on a double move. He's just so inconsistent and so technically flawed right now. He had another penalty in that game, I believe, for illegal hands to the face as well, too. A lot of grabbing and clutching going on. That tends to happen quite a bit with a cornerback that's really unsure of himself. And, you know, it finally resulted. His play was so bad in that game that in order to preserve that lead and not give Andrew Luck a chance, you know, they ended up kind of benching him completely, and they put Antoine Blake in the game to mop things up. And lo and behold, Antoine Blake, who's undersized, comes up with an interception at the end of that game. We'll see how they treat this young player moving forward. Remember, they gave Cortez a big extension prior to the start of the season, so he's not going anywhere. Right now, what they need to do, though, is they need to work through these rough spots with him and try to get him back on track and build him his confidence up one layer at a time. And I'm not sure. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens against the Ravens Sunday night, because this is a big game that the Steelers could put themselves in position to take over the division with a win. And I'm not so sure you want Cortez out there in this game.
Ryan Shazier, I think once he gets some game experience under his belt, I think he has a chance to be a really good NFL linebacker. How did he look yesterday getting back into the fray?
You know, we really haven't focused in on him. We'll have some tighter film study, but just as a general consensus overall, he seemed to play okay. He did see quite a few snaps in his first action back. At one point, though, I think I saw him limping after a blitz and almost getting home on that. So, you know, the key thing is he is back on the football field. And remember, he's missed a lot of action. I've been out since week three. And that's hard for a young player in Dick LeBeau's defense to get back on a train quickly. He played 30 snaps overall. Mm-hmm. We saw quite a bit of Vince Williams in that game as well, too. Vince Williams actually played six more snaps than Shazier did. So I think they want to slowly work him back into action. His play really didn't stick out negatively or on the positive side from our initial view of the tape. We'll kind of focus on him later on in the week when we get the all 22.
Okay, got it. Brent Keisel. Suddenly, there's signs of life, Dave. He's done some pretty good things.
Boy, this guy, I think even heading into this game, leading the team in quarterback pressure, he's playing. I don't know how better to describe it. There's a fountain of youth with him. He really is playing well. He's healthy. He probably should have gotten maybe a few extra, if not for the penalties, probably got robbed of a few pressures in that game against the Colts. The whole front seven against the Colts really got off the ball well and was getting a push, not just Kiesel. But right now, for a guy his age right now, he is playing on top of his game right now. And, you know, you just worry about overworking a guy like that right now. We're starting to see Stephon Tuitt, the rookie, get a few more snaps. He really didn't make a big impact in that game. But as long as they keep these bodies fresh and rotated in and healthy, you know, Kiesel, what you see right now is what you should get for, you know, moving forward.
You, of course, took a long look, Dave, at the Ravens-Steelers Thursday night game when they played in Baltimore. What needs to change for the Steelers to change the result and really grab hold of the division at the stage Sunday night?
Well, you got to know that the Ravens are probably going to go, you know, run that outside zone that they had that success with back in week two there. And, you know, the Steelers had problems with that early on in the season, and really as recently kind of as the second game against the Browns. So, they, you know, those, the Browns and the Ravens are the two teams that really run that thing good. Now, the Texans, who they played on Monday night, the Steelers did, once they settled down in the first quarter there, they did do a better job at stringing those runs out. And that's where it starts with the Ravens. You've got to stop the run. Joe Flacco is not known, well, he's known as being an inconsistent quarterback on third and long situations. So that's the key. You just got to stop this run first and foremost, and then get Flacco into the third and long situations. Right. And he's got Eugene Monroe back there as well, too, at left tackle. Monroe saw his first action Sunday against the Bengals after missing the previous four games. He did not give up a sack, a pressure, or a hit in that game. I took a quick trip through that game already. And, you know, he's going to be on top of his game. So you've got to get pressure on Flacco, force him into some errors in this game, probably on third downs. And the Steelers, you know, if the Steelers offense plays like they did in this game Sunday against the Colts, they shouldn't have a problem. But something tells me this is going to be one of those good old-fashioned Steelers-Ravens games. It's going to end up something like 19-17.
Dave, always a pleasure. Appreciate the time. Great insight.
Steve, I appreciate talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Dave Bryan, SteelerDepot.com. Digest this story for a moment. We'll get to the Penn State game in a moment. But digest this story as we go to break. In Georgia, they have a run-up-the-score rule in this youth football league. And I believe that the threshold is 33. I think that was the threshold. This team is winning 32-0 and on defense. The opposing team throws the ball, and this little guy for the team that's up 32-0 intercepts the ball and runs it all the way back for a touchdown. Not only is it a touchdown, it is his first ever touchdown. Because they surpassed the 33 points, the coach was suspended for one game and fined $500. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, got to go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I heard that story, I think it was Friday, I think. And I sat back and thought, there is something so incredibly wrong right now.
That we talked about that this morning on the Mark, and there is nothing in that whole story that makes any kind of sense to me at all. This is an 8-year-old, I understand, that is, as you said, his first touchdown, and you're going to be the coach sitting there going, no, fall down, don't score. I mean, come on. That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Well, the other part that makes no sense is fining the coach $500. A volunteer gives of his time.
Right.
Come on.
Insane. It is insane.
Yeah. But you know, we can't let eight-year-olds get out of control. That's exactly the problem in society. It's 8-year-old football players intercepting the balls and running for touchdowns. It's just got to stop, Steve. That's the end of it.
I know I'm embarrassed.
I never had
stupid
that
stupid 8-year-old kid.
Yeah.
I never had that problem coaching the young kids because I never coached them well enough to have a lead that far. It was
actually
not their fault.
Actually, the rule was put in for your teams.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never coached them up well enough for that to happen.
Do you know what the issue was with your teams?
Can't wait.
There were many.
Play calling.
Ouch.
This is where Kevin comes back and puts down every little kid and says, it was execution.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
We are brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And Kevin's arrangement with Sunbury Motors has tested the Purdy's insurance power.
No.
Is there enough of the planet?
I think there is.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Keyworth 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin is driving this week.
A Hyundai Azera. That is a midsize luxury style vehicle. And I say style vehicle because it is not the high-end price that you would expect out of a luxury vehicle, but it has a lot of those features. And if you don't know much about it, you should take a look at this Hyundai Azera. It's a 2013. It is a leftover, so the price is absolutely fantastic. As a matter of fact, they're dropping $5,800 off the sticker price this week if you ask about the 2013 Hyundai Azera. And it has the 5-year, 60,000-mile warranty still in effect. This is a vehicle that has never been titled. Room for five. Gas mileage is around 30 highway, V6 engine, and as I said, the luxury things like leather interior, leather seats, heated front and rear seats, navigation, and of course all the other little features that you would expect, including, I think it's an 18-point, I think it's either 8 or 18, I can't remember, I have to count them up when I get back in the car, different positions you can put the passenger as well as driver's seat in. So check it out, Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, the Hyundai dealership. You can also see it at Kevin Herr on Twitter and on my Facebook page. And like I said, right now, you can grab it for under $28.
Good deal.
All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. All right, the officiating in the game. Obviously, there are a lot of issues, and in fact, Bill Carollo is going to be on BTN Live tonight. I know because I follow him. I'm the next guest after.
That's probably set up that way on purpose.
No, because the conference knows how I handled things the other night.
I'm kidding.
I mean, they know how I handle things the other night. I do not referee games on the air and never have. And when I look at a replay, I look at it in a black and white fashion. Either it is or it isn't. Is there enough to overturn it? For example, on Blacknall's touchdown, I'm looking at Blacknall's touchdown, and I asked openly, did the elbow hit before the knee? I said, nope, the knee hit first. It's a touchdown. So it's not one of those where I'm rooting for one or the other. On the Bell thing, on the interception, I said right away, never had control, ball hit the ground. I said, this shouldn't take long because he hit the ground right away. Anyway, the clock stopped right away, which means that they don't have to take extra time to respot the ball, take extra time to change the clock, things like that, and go back and rewind it and look at it for that. That's why I thought it would take no time at all. So it wasn't one of those, oh, gee, I was hoping that he dropped it. I don't look at it that way. I'm trying to tell the fans who are listening what is accurate, what's not. If he had caught it, I would have told you openly right away, like I have many, many, many other times on the broadcast, even when it went against Penn State, nope, good play, it counts. And I've done that all the time because hoping for something is not a way to broadcast. And on this one, it was obvious. Now, I will be frank with everybody. On the delay of game, when it came to the field goal, I look at the play clock a lot, but not all the time. And I did not look at the play clock and did not know about it till after the game. So I didn't know. The one that I put in two questions to Bill Carollo, and the two questions I put in deal with, you know, was the leaping penalty, not that it was called correctly or not, but was the assessment correct? Is that something that if it were a normal situation, you'd just tack on as a kickoff would be 15 yards? And because it was overtime and they got the ball right away, that's where the half the distance of the goal came up. Was that properly assessed? I just want to make sure. That's because a situation I've never run into before. And the other one was on the personal foul, roughing the passer, that's a defensive penalty. I've always been under the assumption the clock stopped after that, that it was an offensive penalty. They would have marked it off, set it, and then started the clock. And we saw that, for example, in the Capital One Bowl with LSU, the offensive personal foul. They marked it back, and LSU thought the clock was stopped, and it wasn't. It was against the offense. The clock ran. I thought the defense, if it was a penalty on them, the clock stopped. And what they did was they set it and then started the clock. And I didn't think you were supposed to do that. And then Penn State called the timeout. I was under the impression that the clock should have stopped and that if they had made an error, Penn State should get its timeout back, because one thing, James Franklin wasn't calling timeout. He even said, I didn't call timeout. And Urban Meyer, also in the Sam Pickett field goal, did not call timeout. So they were at that stage of the game. Those are the questions I have that I want Bill to answer, so I at least can give you the right answer from a person I eminently respect.
Steve, one of the questions I have for you as a broadcaster, and was a couple of us were having a rehash of Saturday night's game yesterday afternoon, and someone asked me, would you ask Steve Jones what limitations does he have as a broadcaster in announcing a game like that where a call is just so blatantly and obviously wrong? Can you say that is the worst call I've ever seen in my X number of years, or the officials in this game really stink it up? What are your both personal and also maybe contractual limitations on commenting about something like that?
Well, I know we can be suspended or fined. I know that, but that doesn't enter into my thinking.
And I didn't know what I'm fined.
Yeah, I believe I can be.
Okay, so it's like coaching midget football in Georgia,
right?
Well, for example, if James Franklin crossed a mythical line,
mm-hmm.
he could be fined $10,000. And I've never asked, but I've always pretty much felt that, look, I'm on there for the Penn State radio network. And it's not in my contract, but I've always assumed that, hey, look, you know, there's a line you can't cross. I've never been one in my career to officiate the game. I don't belabor calls. Never have. And I try to state what the facts are. I try to realize, too, that over 3.5 hours, I'm going to make a mistake in a game. I'll make more than one mistake during the game. The coaches will make a mistake during the game, except for Todd Haley. And the players will make mistakes in the game.
Sure.
So everybody in the place is going to make mistakes. And the referees will make mistakes. I've always strongly believed that as professionals, the last thing that John O'Neill and his crew want this week is what they're getting. The intense scrutiny of people who watch the conference, what Brad Nessler and Todd Blackledge said about them, and so forth. And I will tell you what I think happened. In other words, I'll say that's not right, that's incorrect, which I did say.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I don't want to belabor it. I mean, at one point I said, well, obviously, he said, you know, Ohio State has had touchdown drives of 39 and 39. One was set up by an eyebrow-raising call. Not exactly controversial beyond words, but it lets you know that I didn't agree with what they did, but you try to do it in a low-key way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to belabor it and referee the game. When Penn State's margin of error is thin the way it is, obviously that makes it a bigger hurdle to overcome. But as the game goes, I'll tell you what I think. But once I'm done at that point, I try not to use big adjectives. I try not to blow it completely out of proportion. I try to be matter of fact on it, but I also have a responsibility to move to the next play.
Yeah, the game does go on.
If I don't move to the next play, I'm not going to call. I will not have a good chance of calling the next play correctly if I don't go to the next play. I also work with two people in Jack Ham and Dick Girardi that also are the same way about moving to the next play.
Steve, another question that came up is, what are the sanctions, if any, that could befall the officials of that game for the calls they did or did not make?
Well, you are subject to being suspended, but they will never tell you if the officiating crew or said official was suspended. They won't tell you that. There was a game last year that Penn State in basketball played that had a series of problems in it. And it was with one official as to what he did with a personal foul situation, got it completely wrong, then got something else wrong. The kid eventually fouled out. And the Big Ten, unbeknownst to anybody, we knew it because when you're involved in it, they tell you, you hear.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That official was quietly suspended for one game. Nobody knew about it because they don't give the assignments out until a few days ahead of time. But we knew he was suspended for one game. So that can happen. So if they felt that things were egregious, if they felt it was incompetent, if they felt they lost control of the game, either the official or officials could be subject to that, which of course means they lose a game's worth of pay.
Sure.
Too. I mean, if you don't officiate, you don't get a per diem and you don't get paid for the game. You're not paid on a contractual, hey, we're going to do 14 weeks and here's 14 weeks worth of pay regardless of whether you're there or not. You are paid if you punch the clock.
You know,
so Right.
The North Koreans have the appropriate solution. They send them to re-education camps.
Well, you could lose control of what's going on out there, and you're paid not to lose control of what's going
sure.
on out there.
Sure.
For example, the timeout on the sideline. James Franklin goes running down. You have 107,000 people, 108,000 people. It's really 108,000.
Yeah.
Going wild, going crazy in the stadium. Can I buy that they didn't hear him say it? Yeah. Can I buy that they didn't really hear Urban Meyer say that? Because Urban Meyer went sprinting down the sideline, and the official may have assumed that that's what he was running down to do, because most coaches do call a timeout before a guy attempts a field goal in the waning seconds. But that's not what he was trying to do either. So in each case, each coach lost a timeout. Penn State, it cost them a timeout. And I'm of the opinion that because I believe the clock should have stopped with 37 seconds and not restarted till the snap, that they should have given Penn State its timeout back.
Oh, absolutely.
But, again, I might be wrong about that, and I sent an email into Bill Carollo to make sure my interpretation was correct, and if it's incorrect, I will tell everybody that my interpretation was. But I try not to belabor these things
right.
as much as possible.
Right.
You know, it's
Steve, it was very interesting. Yesterday afternoon while watching Kevin's Steelers romp, I got on the Columbus, Ohio newspaper, the Columbus Dispatch. Just curious how the Buckeye home newspaper reported the game. And two things stood out. One, they immediately acknowledged what they considered to be blatant officiating errors leading to 10 points in favor of the Buckeyes. They didn't use words like apparently or looked like, but they were just pretty clear about it.
No, and, I mean, they are. I mean, the ball is not an interception, and and the field goal is kicked 3 seconds after the play clock runs out.
Some writers, even local ones, were using those kinds of words to sort of, it suggested that, you know, when it's just, it is or it isn't. And Urban Meyer was quoted in the Columbus newspaper with this. He said, "Boy, those kids from Penn State played really hard." And obviously he was right about that. I mean, it was almost like an admiration society, which it should have been.
But here's one I want to make sure people understand. I know there have been calls over the years that have gone against Penn State. Okay? Believe it or not, there have been plenty of calls that have gone Penn State's way.
Sure.
Right? Nick Suke's interception against Purdue is not an interception. The ball hit the ground. And Penn State caught a big break and won the game by 5 points. So, over the years, you know, it evening out, it's a meaningless thing. But the last thing people should think, to me, is that officials walk into a game with an idea they're going to get a team. They don't want to do that. They just want to officiate the game. Now, is it human nature to know which team's the favorite and so forth? My goodness, you know, everybody knows that going in. But you don't officiate the game like that. And I think there is... That's where the crossing the line part comes.
Mm-hmm.
When you accuse the officials of bias, when you accuse them of taking sides, when you accuse the conference of being anti-Penn State and things like that, I think because errors were made, and in a game that went to overtime, there are errors that eventually swung the game or made the hill really great for Penn State to overcome, there's no question that the calls played a role in Penn State not winning the game. But it wasn't deliberate. And that's the most important part out of this. It's not deliberate. And I always try to keep that in mind in doing my job. That they don't sit there in a room and say, "Hey, remember, at a key moment." That's not how it goes. And I know, and I respect the immense and incredible emotion of the fans who feel their kids were... robbed out of the opportunity of winning a big football game. A game that, in a lot of ways, they deserved to win by how they played. But at the same time, just like the broadcaster made errors, the coaches made errors, the players, the coaches on both sides, by the way, made errors. The players on both sides made errors. Fans probably themselves made errors because maybe they had a little bit too much beverage in the parking lot as to what maybe they said during the game. The officials made errors on the field, too, and they're expected to be perfect. What is bothersome in this situation is that the backup that backs up every call is the part that they're telling you failed, when the tools on the scoreboard gave them everything they needed to see in beautiful $10 million worth of HD.
Absolutely true.
Steve, I got Cindy from Shamokin Dam that would like to comment as well.
Hello, Cindy. Welcome to the Kevin Herr Steeler Fun Fest.
Hey, there's nothing better than Kevin Herr. I'm sorry, but I have to call it the way I see it.
You're not going to get an argument from me.
Let me just say this. When I watched that debacle, what came to mind was, and I think it was on 60 Minutes, but it could have been on another show, basketball referee who exposed the fact
Tim Donahue.
They routinely conspired to stick it to certain teams when they officiated basketball. And it was a great embarrassment.
Cindy, let me correct you on that. That is not exactly true. I know the story you're speaking of. Tim Donaghy was accused of, and I believe eventually convicted of, fixing NBA basketball games. And, of course, now is out of a job. And what he did was explain how they did it. And how they did it was, instead of making the key call at the end, they make the key call at the beginning. And that's what he's talking about. In fact, I know Tim's dad, because his dad, Jerry, refereed many a Penn State basketball game for years in here. So that's actually what the story was about.
Well, okay, then maybe I misunderstood. But I'll tell you, as someone sitting watching her television, it just was pretty clear to me that this was being unfairly reffed. You know, I hear what you're saying, and you want to give these people the benefit of the doubt, and maybe one mistake would be understandable. But when it's one after another, and when it's big things, and when the play is being played on the Jumbotron, and 108,000 people minus the number that can't see it because their back is to it, see it plain as day. I don't know what there is to argue. And then to claim there's equipment failure when it's playing up over your head and everyone
else.
Right.
No, that part, I agree with you. I agree with you on that part completely, Cindy. First of all, Jack Ham and I are sitting 10 feet away from the replay people. 10 feet away. Now, they're in a closed lock booth, but they're 10 feet away. We had the network feed, ours worked.
Well, and the people groaned. The whole stadium groaned. I mean, I'm no expert on football or any other sport, for that matter.
Well, the ball hit the ground.
I mean, yes, it did. Pretty plainly, they played it over and over again. Right. You know, I respect your diplomacy, and you made a cogent argument, but I'm going to tell you, in my heart of hearts, those refs were not in a even-handed way officiating that game. And they weren't from the first blow of that whistle to the end of that game. And it's, to me, that's just, you know, everybody is entitled to their opinion. Thanks.
Oh, Cindy, you're entitled to your opinion. I'm just saying, you know, I work around these people a lot. They're, you know.
I hear you.
It wasn't remotely their best night.
No.
That's diplomatic, diplomatic right there.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you.
It was not their finest hour.
Bob, great to hear from you. Kevin?
Yeah, it's nice to be here.
You know, you can't even give Todd Haley a nugget.
No.
One game is not a season. I like to let the season breathe, Steve.
And by the way, to all the fans, was it Joe at the beginning? I called the Steeler-Colts game absolutely wrong last week.
You know.